Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Mohammed Mirandi. We're having a little bit of trouble connecting with Mohammed. If we get him, I'll get him on. Hopefully, I'll be able to do it. I wanted to discuss Middle East issues with him. There certainly is a great deal going on in Iraq and Syria, in occupied Palestine. Occupy Palestine, especially in the last few days, even more than the last few days, with Israel absolutely going way out of its way to cause confrontation on the Temple Mount in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, closing it after accusing a Palestinian of shooting an extremist Israeli rabbi. The last I heard about him, Yehuda Glick is his name, the last I heard about him is that he was in serious condition. I don't know what his status is at the moment, but he was shot. A Palestinian was accused of doing it. Whether he in fact did it or not, who knows, but the police raided his home. He fled to his roof for some reason for safety. They tracked him down and they riddled his body with 20 bullets and murdered him in cold blood. Israeli justice, you know, no Miranda rights, no due process, no judicial fairness, just 20 bullets, case closed. And this is the way Israel settles it's so-called criminal offenses. I have no idea whether this guy shot the Israeli rabbi or not. But even if he did, he deserved his day in court, which Israel did not give him. And it wasn't the first time, and it won't be the last. This is typically the way Israel settles things. They decide who has done what, and they go after the person. And usually they just try to kill them and shoot them and end it right there instead of arresting them. But if they arrest them, these people are guilty by accusation, as I like to say. The same kind of justice that goes on in America. Well, if we get Mohammed on the line, we can talk more about this and the situation in Iraq, the situation in Syria. It certainly isn't getting any better. And don't expect any change post-election. I had a great deal to say about the election in America in the run-up after the elections were held, and I put out a new article this morning that I called U.S. Electoral Postmortems. Let me just mention a few of the things that I had to say. If anybody thinks that America has a real democratic process, they're living in a fantasy world. There's no democracy in America. It's fantasy democracy. It's an illusion. And I called America's electoral process farcical, meaningless kabuki theater, illegitimate by any democratic standard. Things aren't what they seem, and that I quoted from W.S. Gilbert, from Gilbert and Sullivan, saying, skim milk masquerades as cream, from Pinafore, I believe. Candidates are pre-selected. They are pre-packaged cardboard cutouts. Powerful interests choose them. Big money owns them. Key outcomes are predetermined. Voters get the best democracy money can buy. Media critic Robert McChesney, professor at the University of Illinois downstate from me, he calls America's system a dollarocracy. Big money and big media election complex controlled. Moneyed interests win every time. Doesn't matter who's running. Moneyed interests win. Ordinary people lose. Duopoly power rules. Republicans and Democrats are two sides of the same coin. Not a damn thing different between them on the issues mattering most. What are they? Corporate empowerment, imperial wars, police state justice, Big Brother surveillance, capital's divine right to exploit workers, control markets, plunder world resources, and rule without challenge. That's what U.S. elections are all about. Republicans and Democrats are on the same page, and even the ones posing as so-called progressives, progressives my foot. Forget about what they say. Look at their voting records. Anybody can check the voting records of anybody in Congress. It's available online. You can Google the name of your representatives, your senators, anybody you want to check, and you can see exactly how they voted, issue after issue after issue. And invariably, it differs greatly from their disingenuous rhetoric. And it doesn't mean who they are. Right-wing Republicans, so-called more progressive Democrats, same pattern repeats all the time. I don't trust a damn one of them. Nobody should trust them, because when it comes to the big issues, they basically are on the same page, supporting what they should reject, condemn, but it's not the way the system works. So they support all the wrong things, and beneficial social change gets thrown in the dumper. It's literally being eliminated in plain sight. Food stamps being cut, Medicare being cut, Medicaid, a shell of what it should be. Social Security, the aim for Social Security and Medicare is privatize them, hand them to Wall Street, so they can rip off ordinary Americans, make a buck and give back less, make a lot and give back less. That's the scheme. George Bush tried to do it. He couldn't. Obama still wants to do it. He just may end up doing it before he leaves office. And that's the dirty system. And media scoundrels support them. Independent candidates, shut out, not mentioned, don't have a chance. The few people who will run as an independent candidate, people who really mean what they say and say what they mean what they say, who if they ever got into office would really try to do the things they talked about. Wouldn't be easy, wouldn't get the legislation they want passed because they'd be way outnumbered, but it's a good start to get some of these people in office. You get a few in, maybe you get a few more. The way the Republicans took charge of Congress and really won things, made things the way they wanted them to be, it happened years ago, I think especially in the Nixon era, and they believe when the Democrats really controlled Congress, I think Nixon immediately after Johnson, where Democrats had controlled things for so long. I mean, basically going back to the New Deal with Roosevelt, Truman, we had the Eisenhower years, but we had the Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter. Democrats, for the most part, controlled things. And Republicans knew that the way to take back power was to do, well, of course, they had big money supporting them, so you got right-wing think tanks. But they did it from the grassroots up. Local school boards, mayoral races, municipal positions, working up to various positions in municipalities and states, and doing it in the Congress, finally taking over the presidency. And now it doesn't really matter whether you've got Republicans or Democrats in power, because they're all on the same page on policies mattering most. They differ on some things, not enough to matter, but on the big things that I mentioned, all of the big things, they're absolutely in lockstep. And if you read the New York Times or the Washington Post or watch propaganda TV, you'll find support for the things that demand condemnation. The so-called wars to deliver humanitarian intervention. My foot, these are imperial wars, mass murdering, mass destruction for imperial dominance. That's what they're all about. Nothing to do with humanitarian intervention or responsibility to protect. Never was that, never will be that. That's not the way the system is. But big money supporting the candidates, supporting the right-wing think tanks, supporting all the wrong things, the imperial lawlessness that I write about all the time, that's the dirty game that goes on. And Obama is part of the dirty game that goes on. I remember right after he was elected in 2008, took office in January 2009, a couple of months later, or it might have been about mid-year, I forget the date, he made a trip to Cairo, and he talked about a change in America's policy toward the Muslim world. Oh, I wrote about it a long time ago. I don't have his speech in front of me. It was a speech before I knew he was a serial liar. But everything he said he would do and stand and stood for was an absolute bald-faced lie, because he ended up doing exactly the opposite. But it was the kind of speech you would wish a politician would make if he really meant it, and then followed up with policies backing up the rhetoric. The words were terrific. The policies were polar opposite, and his whole administration has been that way ever since. So don't moan for him about the elections. Moan for the American people, the ones who voted, that is, who certainly won't get what they voted for. I am not certain, but I believe that the turnout on Tuesday was the lowest in modern times. I saw the figure 38%. In California, it was barely above one-third. Astonishing. Astonishing. If California was a country, I think it would be the sixth or seventh largest in the world. And about only one-third of the voting constituency turned out to vote. Well, I consider that a good sign. What in the devil do you have to vote for? I use the phrase, the difference between choosing death by hanging or by firing squad. Either way, you're dead. Vote Republican, vote Democrat, same thing. One no different from the other on all the big issues. Absolutely the wrong policies being fostered. An America run by moneyed interests, ordinary people being left out entirely. The things that matter most to ordinary Americans is simply off the table. Who ever heard of a country waging permanent wars and not giving a damn about the welfare of its own people and lying to young kids who only join the military most often because the economy is so wretched they can't find a job? And they get a siren song about all the benefits they'll get from the U.S. military. Free education, free health care. What do they get? Arms and legs blown off, PTSD, trauma, maimed for life. And the benefits they were told they will get? They get nothing. They get nothing. Nothing but heartache and ruined lives for the rest of them. Many of them going in as teenagers, coming back a year, 2 years later, whatever. What do they have to look forward to? Absolutely nothing. The government lied to them the way they always do. Governments lie. Nothing they say can be believed. That's the system. The media lie. Nothing they say can be believed. That's why I call them scoundrel media. They're worse than scoundrel media. They're part of the corrupt system responsible for mass killing and destruction. Nobody should pay any attention to them except to realize that what they say or that the truth is the opposite of what they say. And I write about this stuff all the time. Nobody pays me. Nobody tells me what to write about. Nobody influences me. I go where I want to go. I say what I want to say. I try very, very hard getting my stuff right, getting my facts right, saying what I think needs to be said. And again, nobody pays me a dime. Nobody can accuse me of being in the tank for anybody. How could I be? If I do this all by myself, choosing my topics daily, saying what I want to say, writing multiple articles, occasionally even three articles, and in the past few days I did something I never did. On a couple of days I actually wrote four articles, and I had a medical appointment on Monday where a doctor said to me, he remembered what I did, and he looked at me and smiled and said, two articles a day? I said, yeah, occasionally three, and then he looked at me and he said, four articles a day? And I said, oh, no, I couldn't do that. That would be my undoing. And the next time I'll see him, I'll tell him, yeah, a couple of days I did write four articles. Somehow I managed to get through them without collapsing. But that's a little bit more than I want to do. That's a little bit of an overload for anybody, I would think. But two articles I could handle very easily. But it really depends on what's going on and the things that I think are important that need addressing, that I want to explain to people, the people who may not be as aware, who don't spend the time researching that I do. In most cases, because they haven't got the time. They're working. They've got family obligations. My former working career is behind me. I'm retired. I'm 80 years old. What am I going to do, sit around all day and watch television? I despise television. Nothing on television worth watching. So I decided years ago that this is what I would do. It really was my glorious accident. I never planned it, but this is what I do every day, including holidays. I write, I do media work, I get lots of interviews. It truly has become my passion. It's what I look forward to every day. And most important to me is to explain to people what's going on the major issues, the things that matter most, the things that I hope people will get involved in, to try to change, because if ordinary people don't put their efforts behind changing things, they'll only get worse and worse, and that's exactly what's happened. And with 80 years of experience to look back at, I can look back at my life years earlier and realize that the way things are today are so infinitely worse than when I was growing up, when I was a young kid in high school, well, in grammar school, and when I was old enough to understand, and then in high school, in college, in my early working life, during the Vietnam War, the Southeast Asian conflict, or the Korean War. I remember the Korean War very, very well. I was a freshman in college. As a freshman in college, I remember we used to talk about we needed to keep our grades up because we didn't want to end up in what we call the frozen chosen. The Chosun Reservoir in North Korea, where the U.S. forces sent in, invading the North, and North Korea wasn't a pleasant place, even during peace. Terrible winter weather. Anybody fighting in that kind of weather, just oppressive weather to fight a war in. So we use the expression, the frozen Chosun. And I've written about how the North Koreans did not initiate the war. The South Koreans initiated the war at the behest of Harry Truman, which is the way it always is. So whether it's the Gulf of Tonkin getting us into Vietnam, or America getting the South Vietnamese the South Koreans to invade the North, that's the way the wars are waged, and that's the way that the Korean War was waged. So don't blame it on the North Koreans. And despite many, many years of wanting rapprochement with Washington and the West, they've been turned down flat because Washington needs an enemy and North Korea is it in that part of the world. And I've used the expression that really in Asia, China is the enemy and North Korea is the punching bag. And that's exactly the way the situation is. But the danger is that something could really get out of control. We could find ourselves in a war that really could be an Armageddon-type war. Hopefully it'll never happen. I never worried during the Cold War when we had mutually assured destruction. That is when I was old enough to understand. As a young kid in grammar school, before I was old enough to understand, we used to have fire drills. I've mentioned it on the program before. We had fire drills. We used to go down the fire escape into the schoolyard pretending we could be safer than in the building. You know, if the building was targeted with a nuclear bomb, that was the fear, we'd be safer in the schoolyard. Well, of course, I look back and laugh about how ludicrous that was. But we literally had drills. We went in the schoolyard. I think as young kids, it was just a nice break from the classroom. Five years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, however I was. I wasn't old enough to really understand what was going on. But once I did have some knowledge, and there was no television in those days, but on radio, the little that my parents talked about it, I realized that it was absolute lunacy for one country to attack another with nuclear weapons. And we had some presidents in America who absolutely wanted no part of doing it. Truman wanted no part of doing it. He fired MacArthur because MacArthur wanted to use nuclear weapons against North Korea. Multiple nuclear weapons. He wanted to lay down a radiation belt along the border of North Korea and China. MacArthur. And I remember when he came back and gave his "All Soldiers Never Die" speech to Congress. I saw that on television, 1952, 53, forget the year. It was right after we got a television set at home, and I stayed up to watch him. And, of course, the Congress gave him a rousing welcome and ovation and support. But he was a lunatic. He wanted nuclear war. And a nuclear war against North Korea would have been a nuclear war against China, would have been a nuclear war against Russia, and you wouldn't be listening to me right now because we all would have been gone. And the young people, of course, never would have been born because a nuclear war would have meant Armageddon. That was Douglas MacArthur. Well, Truman stopped that, and Jack Kennedy stopped it too, because the crazies, generals, other people in government at the time, wanted nuclear war with Russia when we had the advantage, literally had the advantage. People like Curtis LeMay, a World War II hero, others like him, and I've mentioned on this program before, and I wrote about it, that they supported a nuclear war with Russia, including in National Security Council meetings. And there was one where the topic came up, and Kennedy was so enraged, he stormed out of the meeting. He wanted no part of these people. And he later mentioned to Secretary of State Dean Rusk at the time, and these people call themselves human beings, and that was his quote. He wanted no part of it. He wanted no part of a nuclear confrontation with Cuba. And he said it after the fact, after the missiles of October crisis. He said he never had any intention of attacking Cuba with nuclear missiles or any other way. And there was agreement with Russia on that, and it was settled amicably. But it was hairy, as reported in the news at the time, 1962, and I remember that very, very well, indeed, and on television. But thankfully, we had Jack Kennedy then. Obama is no Jack Kennedy, and I don't trust him. Anything can happen. Republicans, Democrats, same page. We could end up with a very, very serious war. So when Republicans take over in January, I believe it's on the 3rd, things, as I like to say, things will change but stay the same. In other words, nothing will change. Same policies, same new faces, same policies. Heaven only knows what will happen. But Obama's got 2 years to go, and I've mentioned in past articles that maybe humanity won't survive his full tenure because that's the way he is. He could end up getting us into something that no responsible leader would ever dare. And this is what scares the devil out of me, that we literally could end up with something very, very serious, a major confrontation east-west that could end up in a nuclear confrontation. And if that happens, it will do something that all the years of the Cold War never did, because as scary at times as those years were, we had leaders that wouldn't dare get into a confrontation like that. But the people around today I don't trust, and nobody should, including Obama, because we could end up in something very, very serious. And I know I've mentioned on this program before that the former head of America's nuclear Navy, Hyman Rickover, testified to Congress in 1983, I believe it was, and said when countries go to war, they will use every weapon at their disposal to win if they have to. If they have to. If they don't have to, they won't use weapons like nuclear ones or chemical ones or biological ones. But if America and China or America and Russia ever get into a war with each other and they can't defeat each other with conventional weapons, then Rickover is right. These countries will use nuclear weapons to win when there's no other way to do it. And if they do, of course, need I explain further? Curtains. Curtains. That's what it means. Hopefully it'll never come to that. It never did during the Cold War, but it certainly could happen now because Obama is president, and I guarantee you, whoever succeeds him will be worse than he is. He was worse than Bush. Bush was worse than Clinton. Clinton was worse than Reagan. He had Bush too in there. Each president worse than the one he succeeded. Who will the next one be? Could be the first woman president, Hillary Clinton. I remember somebody quoting her, a few years ago, I think it was during the 2008 campaign, calling her a war goddess. She scares me a lot more than Obama. She supported at one time annihilating Iran. I think Iran has about 80 million people now. When she recommended it, I think the population might have been closer to 70 million. And I wrote about it. And she actually promoted this lunatic notion. And she couched it in terms like, if Iran threatens Israel or another U.S. ally. Well, Iran hasn't threatened another country in over 2 centuries, maybe 3 centuries. Iran threatens nobody now. Its nuclear program is entirely peaceful. 16 U.S. intelligence agencies say so every single year. America knows it. European countries know it. Israel know it. Israel knows it. But they say exactly the opposite. We could end up in a war with Iran. It certainly wouldn't be initiated by Iran. But these are the crazies that are running things in America, the people like Hillary Clinton would support, or maybe a Jeb Bush. Haven't heard that he's decided to run yet, but I believe he probably will. Can you imagine 3 Bushes as president? My God, I couldn't imagine 2. The last... Well, the last time we had it, we had John Adams and John Quincy Adams. We had 2 Roosevelts. Not the kind of people that we have around today. They weren't saints, for sure not saints, but certainly much different than the people we have today. The two Bushes, horrible. The father, horrible. The son, horrible. If we get Jeb Bush, he'll probably end up being worse than George, George Jr. And if he runs, I don't know what things will be like in 2 years. We know that the Republicans routed the Democrats this time. But they may make such a mess of things in the next 2 years that maybe a Democrat would come back in power, would win the presidency. Maybe Democrats would take over the Congress again. Who knows? 2 years is a lifetime, as they say in politics. My God, 2 months can be a lifetime. But the Democrats were routed. Republicans took over the House and Senate. They'll conspire with Obama. It doesn't matter whether he's a lame duck or not. I think it really is a false expression, because he and Republicans and other Democrats will follow the same policies I mentioned earlier, and because that's the way the system is. The system is run by an embedded power structure, and it literally doesn't matter who's in office. Mickey Mouse, an electronic image, it doesn't matter. The power system runs America. Moneyed interests, that's what matters. And it doesn't matter whether you've got a Republican or you've got a Democrat. The system stays the same. The major things keep repeating. Dirty things that harm the interests of the American people and supports the powerful moneyed interests, the war profiteers, the bankers, the other big corporate interests, the corporate crooks, stealing from the ordinary people and giving it to these kind of people. That's the system, and that's the way it'll continue again, regardless of whether you get Republicans or Democrats in charge. So I wrote scathing articles about the U.S. election, explaining to people, the people who literally still think we have an honest system. But the turnout, as I understand it, was about 38%. Shocking numbers. To me, encouraging, because it tells me that maybe enough people are waking up, and maybe awakening will lead to something much more important, with people literally deciding they're not going to take this anymore, and they're going to do something by sustained commitment to give us all the kind of government we all deserve. Government of, by, and for everybody, equitably. It's there for the taking if we decide we want it, but wishing won't make it so. Ordinary people have to work for it, and we've gotten major change in the past. We've gotten civil rights. We've gotten labor rights. We can get the kind of government we want and deserve if we work for it. My God, in my lifetime, we've gotten labor rights and civil rights. But they're all lost because energy waned and the bad guys came back into power and the good guys lost. But it can come back again, and we can get these policies again if ordinary people decide they'll work for it. It takes a lot more than getting out and protesting. It takes commitment to knowing what needs to be done to keep America the kind of America that we want it to be. And if that was the case, and it doesn't take a majority of people, just enough. The famed cultural anthropologist Margaret Mead said many years ago that it only takes the commitment of a few people to decide on responsible change. A few committed people. And her tagline was, it's the only way it ever happens. It never happens from the top down. It's always from the bottom up. And a famed Chicago organizer, who I never had the honor of meeting, Saul Alinsky, he's been gone for many years. Margaret Mead has been gone for many years. I think they both passed away in the 1970s. So that was many, many years ago. Saul Alinsky had a famous statement saying, organized people can beat organized money. It's a great statement. In other words, when people organize and they're committed for change, they can defeat the moneyed interests that cause so much harm to so many people. And this is what I believe in. And late in life, this is my mission, to pass on this word to others, because we really can have the kind of change we want and the country we want. Imagine America with no more wars. Imagine social justice. Imagine the kind of things that we think about and dream about and want for ourselves, if we're old enough, especially for our kids or our grandkids. Imagine having these kinds of things. Well, there are a few places around the world where this happens. Venezuela, not a perfect country, but a country governed by social justice, where people get free health care, free education, subsidized food if they need it. all kinds of government help responsibly, but the key is that the government uses its resources to govern responsibly, not to wage wars. Venezuela isn't attacking any other country. Can't imagine attacking any other country. Has a constitution that mandates these things. It's written in the constitution, and I remember writing years ago that Venezuelans could buy a miniature of the constitution that has a huge constitution that has something like 350 articles with amendments, and I don't know how many more amendments there have been since I last wrote about this. But many of them would keep a copy of it in their pocket because they valued it so much. And they weren't just words. They were policies that the government backed up with real policies, giving people what they deserved, again, using Venezuela's resources for responsible things. And what does America use its resources for? Imperial wars, more imperial wars, still more imperial wars, handouts to bankers. You don't hear about the generous corporate subsidies. I wrote a chapter in my book, How Wall Street Fleeces America, on handouts to corporate America. I mean, hideous stuff. And it's not just recently. It goes back many, many years, literally handing corporations many, many billions of dollars. Our money. Our money. These people don't make enough on their own. We have to hand them our money in generous subsidies, giving us back nothing in return. What kind of a country does this? The way I like to put it, one unfit to live in, literally unfit to live in. Well, I hope you'll follow my writing. This program is almost over, and I do hope you'll make it a regular habit. Follow this one, others on PRN. Follow my articles. They're all on my blog site, Steve Lenman Blog, or just access it by Googling my last name. That's the way I go to it every day, Lenman, L-E-N-D-M-A-N. And I'm adding new ones today. There's a new one on U.S. Electoral postmortems up this morning. Take a look at it. Lots in it. And working on more. I'll do at least one more before the day ends. And if I have time, I'll do still another one. Again, truths. Important ones that people need to know. Do I make mistakes? Of course I make mistakes. But I try like the devil to get everything I do as right as possible. And if I make a mistake, email me, and I'll be the first to admit it. But I want a better country than we have now, and I know everybody listening to this program wants the same thing. Let's get out, put some muscle behind it, and make it happen one of these days. If not for ourselves, for our kids, for our grandkids, they deserve it for sure.